Hello, listeners. If you're hearing this, I'm going to assume you're at least interested in money and understanding the economy and finances. And some of us want our kids to have that knowledge, too. Check out Million Bazillion, Marketplace's award-winning kids podcast that breaks down money to help dollars make more sense. A whole new season is out now. Million Bazillion is presented in partnership with Greenlight, the debit card and money app for kids and teens. Greenlight helps kids and teens learn to earn, save, spend wisely, and invest. You can learn more at greenlight.com/million. And tune in to Million Bazillion wherever you find your favorite podcast.
Marketplace is supported by Putnam Investments. Today, Putnam manages money for more than 9 million individual and institutional investors worldwide. Putnam Investments, a prudent approach to investing. Produced in association with the University of Southern California.
If you've been itching to buy some gold, now's the time to do it. It's only $792 an ounce, best price so far this year, and your strengthening dollar buys just a little more of it. From American Public Media, this is Marketplace.
Marketplace is supported by Gather.com, where friends keep up with the people, conversations, and moments that matter most. People are talking about the economy at Gather.com.
From the Frank Stanton Studios in Los Angeles, I'm Tess Vigeland in for Kai Rizdahl. Thanks for joining us on this Friday. It is the 15th day of August. Gold isn't the only commodity heading downward. Oil, farm products, and other metals like copper have dropped to levels we haven't seen since early spring. And today, the value of the dollar kept pumping iron on foreign exchange markets, especially compared to the euro. That is certainly good news for Americans planning a European vacation, but we wondered about the effect on the overall economy. Here's Marketplace's John Dimsdale.
The dollar today hit a six-month high against the euro. Oil and many other commodities are down over 20%, and some experts see the end of the commodity price boom that's been fueling fears of inflation.
There's a growing realization that the U.S. economy is beginning to hit bottom and the end of the long troubles may be in sight.
That's Joel Naroff, the chief economist for Commerce Bank.
It may not be immediately, but the cycle is working itself through.
U.S. manufacturers are less sanguine. They welcome the lower prices for raw materials, but the stronger dollar takes away a big advantage their exports have enjoyed. Here's Drew Greenblatt, the owner of Marlin Steel Wire Products in Baltimore.
It's more important that the dollar stays where it is because that has opened up a lot of markets that were never available to us. Last month, we got our biggest order in company history from a Mexican company. I think it's because our dollar was at a much more favorable trading range. We snatched it from the jaws of a Chinese company.
Here's the positive scenario that had some economists smiling today. A stronger dollar, along with cheaper energy and food and other commodities, will lower inflation. That means the Federal Reserve Board will have more leeway to keep interest rates down. Lower interest rates should give banks more confidence to lend, which should ease the credit crunch, helping homebuyers and the housing industry. In Washington, I'm John Dimsdale for Marketplace.
John mentioned inflation, and certainly one commodity that's seen inflated prices is natural gas. It's not quite the end of summer, but folks are already hunkering down for a long winter. Natural gas prices flirted with record highs this year. Experts say heating bills could be up 25% this winter. But Mother Nature is trying to help out. Marketplace's Dan Gretsch reports.
Natural gas prices have plunged 40% in 1 month. Lower crude oil prices have helped. So has the promise of new gas supplies from Colorado, Wyoming, and New York. But a big factor has been a slow hurricane season that's allowed natural gas to flow uninterrupted out of the Gulf. Jamie Webster is an analyst at PFC Energy.
Weather matters a great deal.
So far this summer, Mother Nature's kept her cool.
I wouldn't call her necessarily friendly, but she hasn't been as mean-spirited as she has been in the past with prior summers. Now we're at this period of time, at least here in the eastern seaboard, where it's quite a bit cooler for this time of year.
That means less air conditioning and a lower demand for natural gas, which is used to generate electricity. Tony Buck lives near Philadelphia. He switched to a natural gas heater a few years back.
And I discovered to my amazement that natural gas was 3 times cheaper to heat my house than electricity.
It's always dangerous to predict the weather, but meteorologists are forecasting a normal winter. That doesn't mean it will be an inexpensive one. Tony Buck could pay 15 to 20% more this winter to warm his home. That would set him back $70 more a month. That is, unless he doesn't have to turn on the heat as often.
To not have a freezing cold winter in Philadelphia area, who wouldn't mind that?
I'm Dan Gretsch for Marketplace.
Here's one more item that costs more these days, the daily newspaper. Readers of the New York Times, at least those who still buy it in dead tree form, are bracing themselves. The paper's newsstand price goes up by a quarter on Monday to $1.50. We hear so much about declining newspaper circulation, readers' migration to the internet, not to mention the lean economic climate. So how does all the news that's fit to print fit into that storyline? Asumel Tite reports.
Kevin Elston buys the New York Times every weekday for guests at the Capitol Grill, the restaurant where he works on 42nd Street.
You know that the price is going up on Monday?
Again?
The Times upped its price just a year ago. Elston isn't a fan of the Times' editorial stance, but he'll keep buying it because his customers expect him to have it in the restaurant.
You know, it's definitely part of the culture here in New York. It's still, for better or for worse, the paper of record.
The New York Times doesn't consider itself a regular newspaper. It covers local, national, and international news at length. Its readers are generally well-off and well-educated. Media analyst Edward Attorino is with the Benchmark Company.
The Times believes it has, by far and away, the premier brand newspaper in the country, if not the world. It has an extremely loyal audience, and it believes those loyal readers will be willing to pay more for their beloved New York Times.
Media consultant Peter Kreisky is one of those loyal readers. He says he balks at the subscription price, but he keeps paying because he's addicted to the paper's coverage.
The New York Times stands alone with a very, very small number of world-class news sources like the BBC or like CNN.
Still, the Times' daily circulation was down 3.8% for the 6 months ended March 31st. Edward Attorino says raising prices is the latest in a string of tactics to offset falling ad revenue and the rising cost of newsprint.
They've trimmed the size of the paper. They've actually, on some days, reduced content. For example, they don't carry the stock tables.
The Times has also laid off reporters this year. The paper's chief executive said last month she expects the rest of the year to be tough if the economy stays in the doldrums. In New York, I'm Ashley Milne-Tite for Marketplace.
It was a quiet summer Friday on Wall Street. Small gain on the Dow. We'll have details when we talk to the man down in Dallas. A milestone court ruling this week could have a major effect on everything from Facebook to Flickr. A federal appeals court ruled that open source software can be protected by copyright. Developers offer open source programs for free so others can build on them. But now, even if you give away your work, as long as you have a copyright, you can control whether others can make money off of it. We asked Marketplace's Jeremy Hobson to look into what all this means.
Even if you're not a computer programmer, you probably use something that's around thanks to open source code, says tech analyst Rob Enderle.
The iPhone, the Mac OS, in fact, virtually all of the Apple line, a number of phones that are from Samsung, for instance, and from LG actually have open source at their core. TiVo, an awful lot of the set-top boxes actually have open source components in them.
So when a ruling like this comes out, the effects spread across the high-tech ecosystem.
This allows somebody that wants to create something that may exist in a community environment the peace of mind that whatever that is, it will not prevent them from at some future point in time making money off their creation or having somebody actually come in and compete against them with their own technology.
The ruling also affects Creative Commons licensing, which allows popular websites like Flickr and Wikipedia to draw on contributions from millions of users. Creative Commons developer and Stanford Law professor Lawrence Lessig says the ruling is huge.
Companies are increasingly building applications that depend upon the freedom to mix and to share creative work.
Lessig says this ruling means the content creators won't have to have their lawyer's number on speed dial anymore. They'll know that if they have a copyright, their work will be protected. And just in time, Lessig says we're far more dependent on open source now than we were just a few years ago. I'm Jeremy Hobson for Marketplace.
Back to school fashion this year is all about rich, saturated hues that pop against neutral basics and dark denim. Oh, and don't forget leggings and fun layering pieces. I learned all that from Fashion Central, about.com. They're the Tim Gunn of the internet, right? So now, where do we find those things? Well, JCPenney thinks it should be our cool for back to school destination. So does Abercrombie. But today, both reported a drop in second quarter profits. Familiar story throughout the retail industry. Marketplace's Nancy Fargali tells us for many stores, it's time to make it work.
Jennifer Jones shops with her mom and sister at a mall in Los Angeles. And this 18-year-old has her list of favorites.
Like Macy's, American Eagle, Forever 21.
Some older retailers such as Sears want to snare customers like Jennifer by relaunching their image. But a brand like Sears faces a real challenge. Tracy Johnson is Jennifer's mom.
I usually buy all my tools and appliances from Sears, but I don't go there for clothing.
Well, you can't really wear a washer to school. But Sears has a $5 billion apparel business, and the company wants to add a little edge to its softer side. Sears is introducing a new line of streetwear from LL Cool J, and it signed teen star Vanessa Hudgens of High School Musical to appear in back-to-school ads. Richard Gerstein is the chief marketing officer for Sears.
We are not top of mind with that 12 to 18-year-old customer, and that's really what a lot of this focus is about, is becoming relevant.
So how do you gain traction with that customer? Call in MTV. Sears partnered up with MTV for the television movie The American Mall. It premiered this week on the cable channel. In the film, teens wear clothes from Sears and talk about teen things near a Sears store.
Okay, what happened?
Allie got dumped. No call, no nothing.
Gerstein says Sears will carry music, jeans, and graphic tees from the movie.
This teen tween has to believe that this is a place they want to shop. So that when mom says, how about going to Sears, that person says, hey, that would be great, because they've got real cool clothes.
Staying hip means staying ahead of the curve. Brandy Stansberry is a trend spotter. She tells companies what teenagers want, and she has a warning for Sears.
The important thing with these companies is they can't try too hard.
Stansberry uses JCPenney's back-to-school commercials as an example. The ads feature scenes modeled after the 80s film The Breakfast Club. Stansberry says teens in her focus groups aren't buying the cool movie, cool clothes idea. She says teens don't like to be told to like something because it was hip 2 decades ago.
Teens aren't stupid, and they know when they're being marketed to. They don't really like those commercials right now.
But sometimes companies miss out on marketing opportunities. Take the restaurant chain Denny's. It realized that late-night diners are the most profitable part of its business. Mark Camille is the chief marketing officer at Denny's.
Late night was one that we realized we had not been marketing to as strongly as we could have.
Denny's saw an opening. A majority of its late-night diners are under the age of 25. Camille says many of them don't want to go to fast food restaurants.
They were sort of getting tired of the drive-through and the arm coming out of the window. They said, well, we want to keep the camaraderie going.
Which means being able to hang out with friends in a booth and share food. So Denny's introduced a special late-night menu this summer, and the chain even invited hot bands to create some of the food with its head chef. If you like the rock group The Plain White Tees, maybe you'll like their white milkshake.
A vanilla ice cream, cheesecake, white chocolate chips. They wanted to be white, but in a funky way.
The funk seems to be working for Denny's. The late-night-only menu continues into the fall, just in time for cram sessions. I'm Nancy Fargali for Marketplace.
Time to check the week on Wall Street with stockbroker and business analyst David Johnson in Dallas. David, hey, you headed to Europe now?
You know, it's time on to go, sale. They mark down prices.
That's right.
I guess we could go to Euro Disney and, well, we really can't. I think a scotch is still probably $30 in Paris.
But. Yeah, I think you're right. John Dimsdale talked about this a little earlier in the show, and my question for you is, you know, The dollar's been gaining some strength for what? Maybe 2-3 weeks significantly. Yep. Do 2-3 weeks a trend really make?
Well, you know, once you start this ball rolling, it sure can, because it tends to feed on itself. Now, hold the dollar aside for just a minute.
Okay.
And look at what's happened over in all of the other commodities. They're all related. Mm-hmm. If the dollar starts getting weaker, remember, you got to go head someplace until you go out and buy yourself some oil because it's dollar denominated. Or gold. Gee, everybody loves gold, and you can bribe the border guard with it if things really get bad. Then there's poor man's gold. They call it silver. And so you rush out and hedge yourself by putting all this money over there. And oil. Oh, absolutely. Oil, right. And natural gas and gasoline. So you start getting the dollar stronger, and it has just the opposite impact over there. And the commodities just start running. I mean, Tess, how many people were telling us, you know, 3 months ago, 2 months ago, that, oh, you got to be in a hedge fund. Yeah, the stock market stuff is... It's over with. You got to have your money in some sort of a fund that invests in all of these commodities, and that's the way you make your money, and that's the way you hedge yourself. And
but here we are, and now it certainly seems like those who were saying commodity bubble were onto something.
It's what happened. Gold is down 20% from its high.
Yeah.
Silver. And natural gas are down 40% from their high. It in the commodity business, because of the leverage, because you can put down 5 or 10 cents and control a dollar, when it starts going against you, it always ends very badly.
Okay, you want me to write that down?
Write it down.
It always ends very badly. Okay, I've got that here.
Well, now, use the context, because not everything ends badly.
It's in bold and italics. Well, let me ask you this. If we're not worrying anymore about commodities, oil, the dollar's gaining strength.
Oh, wait a minute. You're beginning to sleep at night?
No, not yet.
You want something to worry about?
Not yet. So what do we worry about now?
Here's the buzz. I hate to end on this negative note, but credit card defaults, that's the suggestion is that you can string those guys out for a while, but it's all going to come back to bite you. And just like auction rate securities or subprime or collateralized debt obligations, auto loans and all the paper associated with auto loans. That's the next thing.
Oh, hey, happy weekend, man.
Yeah, it's got to be a good weekend. Track and field's on. It'll be great.
David Johnson in Dallas. Thanks, David.
Bye, Tess.
Coming up, keeping homes cool can be a hair-raising job.
I've seen bats fly at you. Seen spiders that belonged in the Jurassic era. Scorpions.
Oh, my. But first, let's do the numbers. Ongoing credit worries tempered optimism about falling oil prices. All of it amounted to a modest session on Wall Street. The Dow picked up 0.33%, 43 points, to close at 11,659. The Nasdaq traded down 0.1%, just a single point, to finish at 2452. The S&P climbed 0.3%, 4 points, to end the day at 1297. For the week, the Dow fell 0.6%, the Nasdaq rose 1.6%, and the S&P nudged up 0.1%. Investors went on a shopping spree for retail stocks. Shares of Nordstrom rang up 4.3%. Despite that drop in earnings we mentioned earlier, JCPenney rallied 8.5%. And hipster haunt American Apparel soared more than 25%. Bonds rose. The yield on the 10-year T-note fell to 3.84%. And you are listening to Marketplace.
The Marketplace Entrepreneurship Desk is supported by the Kauffman Foundation of Kansas City, the foundation of entrepreneurship. Online at kauffman.org. Whether you're busy or lounging around, the economic gears are always turning. Marketplace is available around the clock, too, as a podcast. Get your financial fix whenever you want it. Download the show and take it with you. Just head over to our website at marketplace.org and click on podcasts.
from the Marketplace Datebook, here's a look at events coming up Monday. In Stockholm, World Water Week continues. This year, the global conference focuses on sanitation. On August 18, 1920, women won the right to vote when Tennessee ratified the 19th Amendment to the Constitution. It was state number 36 to sign on, creating a 3/4 majority in favor. And former First Lady Rosalynn Carter celebrates her birthday. She'll be 81. I'm Michelle Phillippe.
This is Marketplace from American Public Media. I'm Tess Vigeland in for Kai Rizdahl. Michael Phelps swims for his 7th gold medal tonight. After he finishes the water portion of his Olympic tour, he'll be trying for at least a silver on the pommel horse and then going for a world record in the high jump. But if you're looking for a bit of a break from the Beijing Games, the world's top soccer league, the Bundesliga, opens its season in Germany tonight. And the latest team to win its way into contention has many Germans worried about the state of their national sport. Brett Neely has that story.
Hoffenheim is a tiny scenic village in southwestern Germany. Think half-timbered houses and narrow streets. The town is also crazy about soccer. Almost every building flies the blue and white flag of local team TSG Hoffenheim. One house is even painted in team colors. Last May, Hoffenheim shocked the nation when it scored its way into the big leagues of the Bundesliga. The locals are still cheering.
Hoffe, 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 hurra, das ganze Dorf ist da.
That means the whole village is here, which isn't hard, since there are only about 3,000 native Hoffenheimers. But this is not your typical underfunded underdog team makes good story. Jochen Rothaus is Hoffenheim's business manager.
We spent money, perhaps more money than others. It was an investment, and now we're in the top league.
That money, about $150 million, came from billionaire and Hoffenheim native Dietmar Hopp. He co-founded SAP, the giant software company. He also played for TSG Hoffenheim in the 1950s. Hopp's deep pockets have made him a controversial figure, says soccer reporter Matthias Kloppenbach.
In Germany, if you have money, people don't like you. If you have success, people don't like you. So the fans of the other clubs, they hate Hoffenheim.
But they don't hate the team simply because it's pulverizing their teams. German soccer fans are worried that Dietmar Hopp will usher in a new breed of super-rich owners. Owners who care more about money than they do about soccer. Right now, no individual can own more than 49% of any German soccer club. That's Hoff's share in Hoffenheim. The other 51% must be owned by fans, who have a say in how teams are managed. But soccer's ownership rules are expected to be relaxed in the next couple of years. German teams need more money so they can compete with their richer European rivals. Behind a gas station in the village, the team practices for its Bundesliga debut. A fancy training center funded by Hopp is being built nearby, as is a stadium with space for 32,000 that'll draw fans from the surrounding region. Business manager Rothaus says Hopp has no interest in running the show. His goal is to create a team that can support itself.
First cash, das hat
he gave us seed money to get us started, but it was a loan. At the end of the day, we have to pay it back. When the soccer club ownership rules do change, reporter Matthias Kloppenbach says fans should expect the worst. He says powerful and demanding owners are sure to buy up Bundesliga teams. When that happens, Dietmar Hopp's money and methods may not look so bad.
I think in a few years, when other investors may come to Bundesliga, the people will begin to like Dietmar Hopp.
And that would be an underdog makes good story for Germany's top village soccer team. In Hoffenheim, Germany, I'm Brett Neely for Marketplace.
It's August, and those old dog days are barking. Wherever you live, no doubt you'll be trying to stay cool this weekend. And that brings us to today's installment of Hot Jobs.
We're having a heat wave, a tropical heat wave.
Even the Pacific Northwest is baking in record heat right now. And down south in Phoenix, a high of 102 today. If your air conditioner's broken, you may want to call this guy.
Hello, good morning. This is Russ with Dell AC. I'm at your gate.
Oh, okay.
My name is Russ Wishman. I'm a service technician for Dow Air Conditioning and Heating. It's supposed to be 106 for today with a good chance for heat of the day thunderstorms. You can expect that the roof is going to be 10, 15, 20 degrees hotter. Attics are even hotter. Basically just grab my tools here. Always carry a certain amount of things with me. As you can see, this probably weighs 30, 40 pounds.
Good morning.
Good morning, sir. How you doing?
Fine. Come in.
We are in an attic. It is at least 110 up here. And we've got a condensate line that's plugged up, so it's basically leaking back into the drywall. I've been in attics where you go up there and I've seen bats fly at you. Seen spiders that belonged in the Jurassic era. Scorpions. What I've got here is a CO2 charger. This is called a Gallo gun. Basically, it just releases CO2 into the condensate line, and it sweeps any junk that's in the line out. I like the fact that I can provide a service to people that not many can. When my son was in elementary school there, and the teacher was asking everybody, you know, what does your parents do for a living? And at the time, he couldn't quite figure out air conditioning. So he just said that my daddy makes the steak cooler.
Rene Goodell of KJZZ in Phoenix helped us out with today's hot job. We've got photos of Russ at marketplace.org.
Marketplace is supported by Putnam Investments, managing nearly $9 billion in municipal bond assets. Details at putnam.com. Additional support from the University of Southern California's Annenberg School for Communication.
And this final note, we were trying to decide whether to mention the FDA's decision that bisphenol chemicals are just fine in baby bottles, or the fact that Fidelity and Schwab are new to the list of financial firms under investigation over auction rate securities. Instead, because it's Friday and I'm hungry, let's talk cupcakes. There's a food fight going on right here in Los Angeles over what you might call celebrity pastries. Sprinkles Cupcakes filed a federal lawsuit today against rival Famous Cupcakes, accusing it of stealing Sprinkles' quote, modern dot design. All I can say is if, by some miracle, this comes down to a taste test on the stand in court, I will raise my hand in love handle sacrifice to the service of cupcake science. And that is Marketplace from American Public Media. Today, the Dow gained 43 points, a third of a percent. The Nasdaq lost a point, a fraction of a percent. And the S&P 500 rose 4 points, a third of a percent. Our theme music was composed by B.J. Lederman. Marketplace is produced by Celeste Wesson. The executive producer is J.J. Yore. Coming up Monday, the nuts and bolts of reopening a furniture plant.
You can't just come back into that plant and reopen it without reapplying for the permits and the environmental statements and, of course, recruiting the labor.
I'm Tessa Vigeland. Hope you'll join us for that. Enjoy your weekend.
American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money.
Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.